You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Corey Miller, Dave Poulin, it's Overdrive on a Tuesday, just after 4 o'clock in Toronto. It's hot again.
And the music dictates who is on air.
Exactly. Say. So here we go. So Brian Hayes called in yesterday. He called in live. He could not.
That is so great.
He could not talk about Kawhi Leonard leaving. I wondered if he would call back in today because of Vladdy Guerrero Jr. last night.
We're not taking callers.
So Brian from Durham Region is no longer, he's on the do not call list. So anyway,
But he misses everything, Gord.
I wasn't sure if Hayes would call back in today and say, I got to talk about Vladdy. Because you know if Marner signs or whatever, if something happens with Marner, you know Hayes is calling in.
How long is Hayes out? 2 weeks
now? I'm hosting for 2 weeks.
So we can officially say that Marner will sign within the next 2 weeks because it'll be before Hayes comes back.
By the way, it's really good. I didn't wear that. I have that TSN shirt as well. We're on TSN 4.
You can get in trouble with that.
It would look bad. It would look like you were the player and I was your caddy.
And mine's reversible.
Is it reversible?
Yeah, I can.
Reversible clothing is underrated. It never really got its due. So, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last night, 91 home runs in the home run derby, 40 in one round. Both are records.
He's got to be exhausted.
I should think.
Those that do
I
well.
I wondered about that.
Those that do well in the home run derby usually go on a fade right after that.
Right.
I mean, guys that have won that notoriously have had poor second halves of the season. Simply because you throw a shoulder out or you do whatever you do, hitting the ball out of the park 91 times.
So Pete Alonso won the Derby last night. Terrific Mets rookie. He's got 30, I think, at the break.
You'll have to, he's over 30.
He's got 30.
You'll have to explain to people how someone with 91 didn't beat someone with 61.
So what happens is it goes round by round. It's elimination, like match play. So he hit 40 in one round, and Alonso got him by one.
Which would exhaust
you. Oh, my God. Can you imagine? It'd be like hitting drives. It would be like, you know, hitting driver like 91 times. Or, he didn't hit a home run every swing. So, I mean, hitting 150 drives, you'd be exhausted.
It would. And you've hit 150 shots on the course, but not not all drives.
Mostly putts. So I'm curious how this changes the dynamic in the second half, how it changes the narrative. So Vladdy Guerrero Jr. comes to the Jays, you know, after opening day. He's having an okay year. He's hitting .249. He's got 8 home runs. He went 19 games without hitting one. I think the expectations were too high for a 20-year-old player.
They were sky high, and part of that is having nothing else to grab onto.
Now, you grew up in Timmins.
Yes.
You were a Jays fan. Right? You're a baseball guy.
Yeah, back up. I'm a baseball guy before that, and I grew up in Timmins, but it was really when I came to Toronto, you know, as a 9-year-old, and every Saturday for me, you locked into baseball on Saturday.
Right.
You had to.
The NBC game of the week.
And it was the Big Red Machine in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And it was the LA Dodgers.
Yeah.
And
the Cardinals.
Then the Jays came into existence in 77.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a Jays fan right from day one. So a huge baseball fan. And we went to a ton of games.
So we'll get to this in a minute. Because I was a big baseball fan too growing up. I loved the Montreal Expos. They were before the Jays
great
came
teams.
Along. Loved the Expos. But I've fallen out of love with baseball. And I have a problem watching it now. I try. You went to the Jays game Thursday night.
Yeah, My reason is probably a little different for falling out of love with it, and it was because when you know someone well, it's involved. And I went back. We got really close to the Cubs when I was at Notre Dame because our baseball coach was best friends with the GM, Jim Henry. So when we went to a Cubs game. We were on the field. We were, it was a totally different experience. We're in the clubhouse, and I was. If you were in South Bend, Indiana, for as long as I was, you were a Cubs fan. That was your natural association. A lot of kids from Chicago went to school with. Games were on in the afternoon. The only team with afternoon games. What did you do when you were in college in the afternoon?
Yeah.
You watched baseball. Well,
it was your better study, right?
I mean, you had options. But I got close to Alex Anthopoulos when he was here.
Yeah.
And we used to compare thoughts and ideas about our respective sports. And then he was funny. He got sour on the Leafs. When I got fired, then I got soured on the Blue Jays.
When he got fired. So I used to broadcast Blue Jay games occasionally. I would do, 6 or 8 a year.
The difference between doing hockey and baseball.
Oh, I remember the first game I did, the Jays played the California Angels, then the California Angels. And I realized in about the second inning that everything I had, I didn't need. And everything I needed, I didn't have.
And so your prep wasn't going that well.
And the problem is you can't, when you're broadcasting baseball, the next pitch is probably nothing, but it could be everything.
Yeah, it's not a gradual setup to play.
Like it could, so if a defenseman has the puck behind his net,
yeah, you're pretty safe.
You know nothing's going to happen for, you know, 10, 15 seconds. But in baseball, and the other thing is, don't ask your analyst a question with one out and a runner on base. Tick, tick, double play back after this. But I did like baseball. And I guess I hate to sound like, you know, an old curmudgeon. But if I'm going to sit there and wait for a guy to hit a home run all day, that's not exciting to me. So home runs, baseball is on pace to shatter the record for home runs this year. So the record's 6,100 in a season. They're on pace for 6,600. So not just break the record, but smash it. There are 2.74 home runs per game in baseball. So basically in a three-hour game, you're going to see a home run an hour. But the problem is there are now 17 and a half strikeouts a game. So you are three times more likely to see a player strike out than you are to see a player hit a home run.
And how many pitches are involved in an average strikeout? Five, right, six, seven?
Right. And they're going to break the record for strikeouts for the 12th consecutive year. So for the last 11 years, strikeouts have gone up in Major League Baseball, and it's going to happen for a 12th time this year. And the other aspect of it is the stolen base is all but disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first time since 1972, baseball is averaging fewer than a stolen base per game.
And you picture when Ricky Henderson got on base, you slid to the front of your seat.
Right.
You simply did.
So to me,
Tim Raines got on base.
Right.
Oh.
Right?
It was great.
Vince Coleman in St. Louis. Right?
Absolutely.
All these guys. So, and I'm sorry if I'm going against the current rage in baseball, but you want excitement? First and third with one out. That to me, do you hit and run? Do you steal? Is the infield playing?
Speedster on first and third.
Is the infield playing back? Like what? There's all kinds of combinations there. There's all and so, what we have now is, you know, launch angle, exit velocity, and here's an example for you. Joe DiMaggio played 14 years in the major leagues. He struck out 369 times total in 14 years. Domingo Santana in Seattle has struck out 116 times so far this year. We're at the All-Star break.
He's going to break Joe's record.
He might break Joe's. If he goes on a tear in the second half, he might break DiMaggio's career strikeout record in a single season.
And so is it specialty pitching? Well,
no, because here's the funny part. Relief pitchers are getting roughed up like never before. Bullpens are getting torched this year like never before.
But the whole concept, I'm there on Thursday night, okay?
Right.
The Jays took their pitcher out with two outs in the first.
Right.
Well, you know, it was 1-0. It was 1-0 for Boston.
Right.
And they took their pitcher out with two outs in the first.
Was he hurt?
No, I think it was one of those reverse starts that they...
Oh, okay.
You know, that they had planned on. And then that night actually was kind of funny. I was sitting, I had three friends in from Notre Dame. So they were talking all about the Jays, right? Well, weren't 3 years ago? And I said, well, 3 years ago, this building was full. And, you know, they'd made all the moves, and it was really exciting. July 4th against the Red Sox on a Thursday night on a beautiful summer evening, 20,000 maybe?
And Grodin.
20,000 in that ballpark.
And Grodin didn't play, right?
Doesn't look good. And Vladdy didn't play. And, you know, so I'm watching this, and it was funny because it was 6-1 Jays. And they said, well, what's been wrong with the Jays? They look pretty good. And I said, just wait. Just watch. And sure enough, the Red Sox got two guys on. And I said, okay, this will be the first half hour of the show tomorrow on Overdrive. I was doing Overdrive with A's before the Kawhi watch. And I said, and I'll talk about how the Jays were up 6-1 and the Red Sox came back. And sure enough, here they come. And at the end of the end of the inning, it's 7-6 Red Sox. And they're looking at me like, have you seen this game before? And I said,
right.
Yeah, but it's hard to like a team that's in as much transition as the Jays are in.
They're 24.
Who do you grab onto?
They're 24 and a half games out, and I get why they were pumping Guerrero, because he's what they have to sell.
But they were pumping something that wasn't here.
Right, but you're pumping
in sports. And now it's here.
Well, in sports, what do you sell? The hope. Past, the past, the present, or the future.
Yeah,
right?
Hope.
So you're either trotting out, you know, Dave Steeb and Jimmy Key on Old Timers Day, or you're come see Vladdy, or look at our team now. Okay, don't look at our team now. Let's bring back Dave Steeb and look at Vladdy, right? I mean, that's part of what you sell in sports. I don't find the product that good. I'm sorry, and maybe I'm missing out, and maybe it, I watch.
So what is it? Is it, well, is it the caliber, the skill level of the individual?
No, I watch a couple of things. I watch a baseball broadcast, and it's like watching the Bloomberg Channel. All it is it's a series of stats and numbers, and you know, tell me stories about the players.
Now this is the most analytical of sports.
It is
far,
but I don't care.
Yeah,
like tell me who are these guys? What makes them interesting? What makes Vladimir Guerrero interesting isn't what he hit in the minors. It's that he's the son of a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad was an electrifying player. Now, this kid's an electrifying player. That's the story
but
of
Vladimir. But how many times can you tell that story?
Well, but there's always a story to tell. Right. I'm sorry. That's our job. And I remember...
Well, that's interesting from a play-by-play guy, because that's what you base it on. Like, when we go into games and you do your prep, I know how you do your prep. I mean, we've worked together, obviously. But you've got to have... I want to have at least 6 to 8 things on every player.
Yeah.
Going into a game.
Yeah. And when I do
for a key moment, a lot of that never gets used.
So take Mitch Marner. So if I'm doing a game, I need to have something new about Mitch Marner.
Mm-hmm.
I've done, I don't know, 150 games he's played. I'm going back to the World Junior and everything else. Couldn't tell you how many games I've done he's played, but you got to have something new. I don't buy that argument that it's too hard to tell stories about players. There's always something new going on. What I'm saying is, putting up 18 stats and me watching him strike out all the time, waiting for him to hit a home run, is not that interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm out of step, and I get it, but baseball's attendance numbers have been a problem. And baseball's TV numbers have been a problem. Now, right now, the TV deals are locked in, and they're raking in all kinds of cash, and the big markets are doing well.
And pace of game has been an issue for them.
So I had lunch in Detroit with some of the guys from the Tigers and the Red Wings one day. And the Tigers guys said, we would never do the labor deal that hockey did because we can't have the big markets be on the same playing field as the small markets. We need the Yankees, the Mets, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Dodgers, the Yankees. Yeah. They got to be able to spend. The Red Sox. They got to be able to spend because we need them to be competitive. They would never do that deal, right? So in the NFL, where all the money's shared, it's okay if Green Bay's as good as the Giants.
Yeah, with 100,000 people.
Yeah, that's okay, right? Because you make money in the NFL before you ever sell a ticket. The TV deal covers all your salary.
Yes.
So that's
covers all your costs.
Right. So that's the difference. But what I'm saying is, I think there's something fundamentally wrong with the product. I don't find it that compelling. I don't, like, unless it's a nice day and you go down to have a few beers and, you know, the last Jays game I went to, the people I was with didn't even watch the game. Like they didn't know who the players were. Now, there was a famous line by one of the Jays in the early 90s that Sky Dome was like a church. Lots of people went, very few understood. And I remember plain as day.
That's good.
I remember plain as day Jimmy Key standing on the mound with his hands on his hips, watching fans do the wave while the visiting team batted. The whole point of doing the wave at a baseball stadium is to distract the pitcher. And Jimmy Key standing there staring at people like, what are you doing? You know, or a ball hit fair down the right field line and a fan reaches out and grabs it, right? And I, you know, guys staring them down. I'm not saying that it was great the fans went. It was terrific. But I'm just saying I don't know that there's a huge core in Toronto of people that follow baseball closely.
Well, if you go to a game at Wrigley Field, it's an event. A lot of them are still in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an event.
Right.
And it starts and the sun's shining and you're outside and... It's a very festive, festive atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's a great old ballpark.
But it's still a baseball.
Fenway's the same way.
But Chicago's still a baseball town.
And
Boston's Boston's a sports town. But I'm not saying, like, I'm not down on Jays fans.
You're more on the game.
I'm just down on the game. I think you're not.
What do you do? You're the commissioner for a day. What do you do to change it?
I don't, like, I mean, first of all, I believe Justin Verlander. Something's up with the baseball. When it goes out like this, like, there's something up with the baseball.
Okay, so is that a concerted effort where somebody says the manufacturers, whoever the manufacturer is?
Well, it's Rawlings. They own
Rawlings.
And baseball owns them.
Okay, and says, okay, we're going to tweak it just a little bit. Wouldn't that get out at some point from someone working in the plant, some engineer that was told to tweak it?
Verlander says it's clear. I mean, they've done tests, and the ball is not livelier, but it's flying farther.
But
it's
more
aerodynamic.
That's almost something's going to change. You don't make the exact same product exact same way every day.
And what can you do about the fact that analytics have changed that game to the point where it's funny because strikeouts used to be viewed as useless. It was a waste of an out, right? Don't waste your outs, mm-hmm. right? That was but now the stolen strikeouts are okay, but stolen bases are wrong, right? Stolen bases are a wasted out because you got a guy on base, they get thrown out half the time, and it's considered a waste.
But aren't guys faster now? It's the same 90 feet.
Yeah, but it's still, I mean, the rate.
So is it the sophistication of the move?
Yeah, the rate that guys get thrown out is about the same. And so even then, if you get thrown out 40% of the time, it's still, you've wiped out a player getting on base.
Well, you talk about analytics, and you see a left-hander come to the plate, and you see three guys all standing within 8 feet of each other.
The shift.
On the right side
of the
infield.
But that doesn't, the shift doesn't explain the fact that it's strictly a power game now. Like, they used to joke in Baltimore, good pitching, good defense, the three-run homer. Mm-hmm. That's not entirely true. They were, Brooks Robinson was a great hitter. I mean, they had lots of great hitters. What I'm saying is, I mean, can you imagine guys like Pete Incaviglia in today's game, Dave Kingman, who used to strike out all the time? At least they just hit home runs. You couldn't have them
bombs.
Play. But now they'd be like the MVP, right? Because that's the game. And I don't, to your point, I don't know what you do. Because it's the philosophy of the sport. And you know what? And Ken Hitchcock, when he coached in Dallas, said this to me. I'm not in the entertainment business. I'm in the winning business.
He's trying to win.
So baseball general managers, baseball managers, they're not in the business to entertain us. They're in the business to win games the best way they can. If we happen to be entertained along the way, that's good. And if the Blue Jays were in first place, I'm sure the Dome would be full.
But you say relievers are getting roughed up. It's still... I mean, complete games are almost non-existent.
Well, but it was, for a few years, bullpens were dominating, and now they're not. And part of that is ball flight, right? The ball is flying farther. For whatever reason, it's more aerodynamic, it's whatever it is. And maybe, maybe I'm wishing we're going back to the days of, railroad trains and buggy whips. Maybe I'm, screaming. I'm not screaming it's progress. I'm saying, as a sports fan, baseball does not entertain me right now. And I would say the same thing in golf. And I've covered golf for a long time. I used to cover the majors. The way the USGA would set up the US Open, where you'd see like three birdies an hour, is not fun for me. Like watching,
So you should like golf right now, then other than...
I do like golf.
Other than the US Open.
Yeah, I do. I like golf. If a guy hits a good shot, you should have a chance to make a birdie. I don't want to see a strict examination.
You don't want to see pain.
I don't want to see a strict examination of golf. If you want to do that, go somewhere and have that when no
or
one's
watch
looking.
Us.
Yeah. that's a failing examination of golf. But my point is, I want to see good players hit
good
shots.
So you want entertainment.
I want entertainment. I'm not saying it should be 25 under. I'm not saying that. But watching guys go around scramble all day to make par is not fun for me.
So who's doing the best job in Major League Sports of entertaining?
The NBA. Yeah. The NBA, and it's not even close. The NBA has personalities. They have entertainment. The irony is...
It's funny, I can name a lot more basketball players than I can baseball players. Right,
the advent of the three-point shot, when it came along, Red Auerbach and some of the old-timers said, this will ruin our sport. It has revolutionized their sport. The three-point shot has revolutionized basketball. And to the point where a guy like Steph Curry can be a dominant player at his size.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, he takes three-point shot to a whole different...
But the way that the NBA markets it... Now, it's got some built-in advantages. It feeds into the shorter attention span. Basketball games are just over 2 hours long as opposed to three for most other
A lot of people don't realize it's four 12-minute quarters.
Right.
Like, they think it's a 60-minute game.
It's a 48-minute
game.
And it goes fast. Like, if you go to a Raptor game at 7:30, like, I take the subway down, I'll be back home by 10.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that. The fact that the fans are so close, the fact that the players don't wear helmets or masks... Right?
Yeah, they're very, very visible.
And the other thing, too, is if you buy a ticket to watch Steph Curry play, he's going to get 25 points. Mm-hmm. You will see him hit a three-point shot. You will see him do his thing. You can pay to go see Alexander Ovechkin play. He probably won't score. He's,
and your favorite guy may not get a hit, let alone a
right.
home run.
He scores in 40 games a year, so he doesn't score in the other 40. You might not see it. Again, if you go to watch Vladdy Guerrero Jr. play, you'll see him in the field. He only hits four times.
He may not have a ball hit to him.
That's
in the field.
Well, third baseman probably will, but you know what I mean. And this, you know, like if you go to an NFL game, you will see Tom Brady throw passes. You will see your quarterback throw passes. But in the NBA, you will see a star do his thing,
and you'll see it closer.
And you'll see it close. And he won't be wearing a mask. And he'll tweet about it and Instagram about it after the game. And he's going to have a ton of personality. And he kind of runs the team. And
well, then take it to a whole different level. And all the rules in their CBA right now that allow movement, allow.
Now I think there's got to be. You know, we talked about this yesterday. I don't like that Kawhi Leonard was calling guys under contract and saying, "Come join me."
Like it's tampering.
It's virtual.
But it's not.
He's not under contract to anyone. But you shouldn't be calling players under contract and saying, get yourself traded. And I said this yesterday. Imagine if it was reversed. Imagine if Paul George called Kawhi Leonard, who had a year to go to his deal, and said, hey, man, get yourself out of Toronto. I'm signing with the Clippers as a free agent. People here would be outraged. They'd be furious.
Well, it borders on the misuse of the word collusion.
It is.
Really, right?
It is. And the worst we've seen is, look, we know that LeBron recruited Anthony Davis.
Please. Go back to Bosch and Wade.
Right, but there's a player under contract to the Lakers calling a player under contract to New Orleans saying, ask for a trade and get yourself sent here. Like, ask for a trade and say you'll only come here. That, to me, is so for the integrity of the game, the NBA's got to step in and say, no. No, we're not doing this.
But the contractual rules allow for movement.
Oh, they do.
Shorter contracts.
But when you're under contract.
Outs, everybody's got an out and an option.
And the other thing is, in that sport, that's the other thing. In that sport, if you get two star players, you've got a great chance to win.
You got three.
So the Edmonton Oilers have two of the best players in the National Hockey League. They can't make the playoffs. Right?
Yeah.
In the NBA, LeBron got hurt this year. But in the NBA, if you've got two superstars...
Well, the good news for the NBA is there's eight teams with two superstars next year.
So I guess what I'm saying is the NBA does it better than anyone. The way they market their product, the way they...
Adam Silver's done a great job.
And I think he gets it. I think Adam Silver gets it.
But he gets it in a way that makes the owners happy. Their values of their franchise.
But the way he handled Donald's
TV deal.
The way he handled Donald Sterling with the Clippers, the way he's handled a lot of things. I like him. And I think that their sport... You know, is it too personality driven? I don't know. I tend to take the player's side. I tend to take the player's side in things. But I like the fact that the players have some power in that sport.
Well, it's uncomfortable for the owners right now.
Right? Like Steve Ballmer.
It is uncomfortable.
Steve Ballmer is one of the richest men in the world. Mm-hmm. And Kawhi Leonard from San Diego State told him what's what.
Mm-hmm.
Here, if you want me to come, here's what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. And he did it.
How many people in the world could say that Steve Ballmer?
Well, we were marveling on Friday because at that point on Friday, and we had such a host of talent through here. Bruce Arthur was here. Yeah. Leo Rauten stopped in. Josh Lewenberg stopped in because they were all on site. And to a person, the Clippers were out.
Right.
Friday between 4 and 7 o'clock, the Clippers were out.
How'd you find out Kawhi left, by the way?
I woke up in the morning. I wasn't up at 2 a.m.
I was.
You were waiting?
No. I was up at a cottage, and the people who own the cottage have a 16-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old son. The 16-year-old daughter came straggling in at roughly 2:30 in the morning, which woke me up. So I checked my phone and saw that Kawhi had signed. And then
ulterior forces kept you up till 2 a.m.
Then an hour later, their 14-year-old son woke up, checked his phone, and let out a loud expletive for everyone to hear because he's a big Raptors fan. That's how I found out.
Yeah, no, I didn't find out till the morning. But that being said, it was probably only a few hours after you because I think I had a 6:45 tea time on Saturday morning.
What's wrong with you?
It's a great game when you play it that early.
I used to play at 8 o'clock in the morning 4 days a week. You could play in 3.5 hours.
Well, we're done in 3 hours and 20 minutes.
But, we'll talk about the length of golf later. There's lots to come today. We're going to talk to Marley Rivera from... MLB, ESPN, and ESPN Deporte. We're going to talk to Josh Lewenberg.
Revisit Friday with him.
Also, he's in Vegas for the Summer League. And that's right. The other thing the NBA's got.
Perfect.
They got the Summer League now.
Got year-round.
And all the stars are going. We're going to talk to Billy Armstrong, the assistant GM of the St. Louis Blues, about building a champion.
Done a terrific job.
And all the things that went into it. And some of it's luck. Some of it's good planning. As I've said, it took Jordan Binnington 5 years to become an overnight success. We'll talk to him. Steve Phillips will join us, getting ready for the Major League Baseball All-Star game tonight. We're also going to play over-under today. So I'm going to give you the over. Some
You're a betting man.
See, I'm getting a bad rap for this, and I should probably... I do like to bet.
Over-under on when we're going to wrap.
426. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, on the TSN app, and on TSN 4. Gord Miller, Dave Pullen here on Overdrive. Some hockey news today. We'll get to Josh Bloomberg in a moment. Greg Johnson, first captain of the Nashville Predators, Canadian Olympian.
Great player at the University of North Dakota.
Passed away at the age of 48 at his home in Michigan. Native of Thunder Bay, he and his brother Ryan both played in the NHL.
Big, big hockey family in Thunder Bay. Yeah, Dad was very involved in the youth programs. Yeah. And
Greg had a terrific career, had to retire young because of a heart ailment. So we don't, and no cause of death has been revealed, but we want to say our condolences to the Johnson family and all those who knew Greg was a beloved teammate, terrific player and a beloved teammate.
Real character kid. He had signed with Detroit in 06, 07, and the physical found some sort of issue, and he was forced to retire. So we don't have a cause of death, but 48 is way, way too young.
Yeah, so our condolences to the Johnson families, who said. And also a trade today, William Nylander's brother Alex, traded by the Buffalo Sabres to the Chicago Blackhawks for defenseman Henry Jokiharju. Now, Jokiharju is interesting. He's one of the guys who played for the Finnish World Championship team. He's won the Under-18, the World Junior, and the World Championship in his career. He's 20.
Really mobile defenseman. Played games with the Hawks last year, and then they sent him back to Rockford to finish the year.
Yeah.
But a good-looking young offensive defenseman. That looks like initial blush. A pretty good trade for Buffalo.
Alex Nylander was picked 8th overall in the 2016 NHL draft.
And this is his brother?
Yeah. He got hurt in his first two training camps. He never seemed to get his feet under him with Buffalo. And I think, you know, not a secret, there was some conflict between the Nylander camp and the Sabres about how his injuries were dealt with and how he was used. And it just didn't work for them. He played 12 games this year in the NHL. He had 2 goals and 2 assists. He had 12 goals in the American League in 49 games. Known as a high-end offensive player in junior, played in Mississauga.
I watched him play there.
Yeah. So a fresh start for him for a Chicago team that's looking for offense, right? No secret. And Chicago's drafted a boatload of defensemen.
But you think of some of the skill that Chicago offloaded in order to move contracts, and Teravainen comes in into mind.
Go back to Dustin Byfuglien, Andrew Ladd.
Each time to reload, they move guys. But I'm thinking of Teravainen specifically as a skilled player
that they're
now looking for.
Right, but they couldn't have,
they can't do it.
It's why I don't like the salary cap in the NHL, because it punishes teams that draft well and win. And you can say, well, I signed better contracts. When you win the Stanley Cup, you have good players.
It's actually punishing some teams that aren't even there yet, like Winnipeg.
Right.
That haven't even won.
Right.
And yet it's still punishing the way they've drafted and developed. And
So Alex Nylander gets a fresh start.
Jokiharju, I think.
Well, that's an interesting trade.
Good pickup.
I got to think, if Buffalo gets Jokiharju, that means Rasmus Ristolainen is getting traded.
Interesting.
Because they've already got, you've got a young defense core. Rasmus Sandin was the first overall pick last year. You've got Jokiharju now.
Highly skilled.
Right. Sandin. So I got to think Ristolainen becomes somewhat obsolete.
Right shot as well, Jokiharju.
Yeah.
So there's your partner for Dahlin, or somewhere down the line, your anchor for a second pairing.
So interesting move by both Buffalo and Chicago. So there you go. That's a little bit of what's going on.
It'll be interesting, too, to see how this ties into the Bill Armstrong conversation, at 6:05, because they're a team that made a lot of moves to get to where they got. Rather than the patient 5-year draft and develop plan that almost doesn't work in the cap now.
Well, they did draft and develop. They didn't go anywhere.
Both.
Right, they drafted Jaden Schwartz. They drafted a lot of good players.
But you think of the pick up Shen, move Stastny out,
right?
Trade for O'Reilly. I mean, there's some big, strong moves in that. And I think this is all triggered by the Vegas factor. I have a theory on that. You can build a team.
Speaking of Vegas, what a segue by my co-host. What a segue. With us on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Josh Lewenberg from the Summer League in Vegas. Question number one, Josh. The temperature in Las Vegas at 1:35 in the afternoon is?
It is hot. It is hot.
No, you don't say it.
That's as specific as I can give you, but it is hot. There's no right temperature here in Vegas. You're either indoors and it's freezing cold, or you're outside and it's unbearable.
You can feel your eyeball shrink when you walk inside. So the Summer League has really become a thing in the NBA, not just to see the young players, but now veteran guys are going to check it out. Vince Carter is doing analysis on it. So who's who, and who are some of the Raptors players that have been around there?
Well, what's interesting about this, I've noticed this especially over the last couple of days, is it's certainly becoming a bigger deal every year amongst the fans and amongst the media. I mean, there's a ton of media coverage here now, and yet as big of a deal as it's becoming to us, it's becoming less and less of a big deal, I think, to these actual teams that look at this and say, well, why would we risk playing Zion if he could get hurt? And of course he did. Suffering a minor injury, knee and knee, just a few minutes into his first game, and then they shut him down. A lot of the top rookies, Ja Morant, Memphis isn't playing, a bunch of the top picks not playing for their respective teams. So, I mean, certainly the product of basketball here isn't the greatest for the Raptors. I mean, they've got a bunch of roster guys or guys that are on the fringe of the roster. Chris Boucher, of course, the G League MVP last year. He's probably going to be with the Raps this year. His contract doesn't fully guarantee until the start of the season, but he's probably the biggest name for the Raptors, a guy that they want to see what he's able to do. Jordan Lloyd, a two-way player for them, and Malcolm Miller is a guy that has a partial guarantee on his deal as well. But, I mean, there's nothing especially interesting here from the Raptors' side of things. I think from their opponent today is probably a lot more interesting than the New York Knicks, R.J. Barrett, Iggy Brazdeikis, a couple of Canadians, and a couple guys that we watched the other day. Ironically, it was not the third overall pick, R.J. Barrett, who looked great a couple days ago. It was Iggy Brazdeikis going off for 30 points. So it'll be interesting to see from the Raptors' opponent today which of those guys steps up and whether or not R.J. can bounce back after a couple of rough outings for the Canadian.
And Josh, we were talking about all the things that basketball is doing right, you know, at the time compared to some of the other sports, and the Summer League is one of them for sure. But so is this the first time you've gone to cover it?
No, this is, I think this is trip number four for me. I've been here a few times. The first year that I was here covering it for the Raptors was the Bruno Caboclo year. So that was interesting.
The infamous Bruno Caboclo year. That was, we all remember that.
Yes, in game one, he got dunked on and cried. And he's still playing here 5 years later, so he actually looked quite good the other day. I think he had 19 points. So, yeah, I mean, this is a good opportunity for guys like that, guys that are trying to prove something even in year five for Bruno. He's trying to earn a roster spot. No tears this year for Bruno.
What's been the buzz there about the Kawhi move to the Clippers? What are you hearing from basketball people there?
I mean, not a whole lot. I think, obviously a lot of people were surprised by it, not necessarily that he ended up with the Clippers, but how he ended up with the Clippers, obviously the Paul George heist. I don't think anyone expected that from Kawhi, and maybe we should have. He's a smart dude. He's quiet, so you don't often hear from him. And maybe a lot of people didn't know that he was capable of pulling off something like this, but it sounds like he did a lot of orchestrating behind the scenes, and ultimately got himself to where he wanted to get to with the player that he wanted to get there with. There's a lot of intrigue, I think, not only about him and the Clippers, but about this NBA season that's to come. There's probably more parity in this league in both conferences than we've seen in a long, long time. So I think there's just, generally speaking, a lot of excitement surrounding basketball and surrounding the NBA here right now.
And as we sat here Friday, Josh, and analyzing everything between 4 and 7 o'clock, the Clippers were the one team that we had pretty much ruled out in terms of an option. So things drastically changed in the hours after that.
Yeah, that was what was so fascinating about it. I mean, a fitting end to a week in which the theme was nobody really knows anything. And yeah, I mean, the Clippers, they had been the front runner, the favorites to land Kawhi, seemed like, for most of the season. And certainly they weren't hiding their interest in him. They sent a high-ranking representative to over half of the Raptors' games this year to try and at least quietly court him. But then, yeah, as things were really heating up in the days leading up to his decision, and maybe he wasn't even, maybe we should stop calling it Kawhi's decision. It was Kawhi's coup, Kawhi's heist. Yeah, I mean, they were sort of flying under the radar. Even the most plugged-in insiders around the NBA had ruled them out or at least reported that they were falling out of the race, and it was the Lakers versus the Clippers. And now in hindsight, I mean, we still don't really know what was going on there, even as more information is starting to come out. But based on what I've heard, it seemed pretty unlikely, I think, that the Lakers would have landed him. It does seem like it was a Clippers versus Raptors battle. And I mean, there's some conflicting information there, too, where some people believe that he was never truly considering the Raptors. My understanding of it is this. I think the choice number one, preference number one, was always going to be the Clippers. But I don't think Kawhi was going there unless he could find another star, another superstar player to team up with. And once Jimmy Butler was off the board, he went to Miami. They zeroed in on Paul George. But if the Thunder had dug in their heels and said, we're not trading Paul George, if for whatever reason that trade never happened and they couldn't get a second star for Kawhi, I do believe that he would be a Toronto Raptor today.
What do you think of the Stanley Johnson signing? It kind of went under the radar a little bit because of all that went on the weekend. But Stanley Johnson was a lottery pick at one time. He's moved around a bit, but it's a two-year deal for the Raptors, not a lot of risk. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, you could throw Rondae Hollis-Jefferson into the conversation, too, because I think both of them, Stanley Johnson and Hollis-Jefferson, they've got similar profiles, and it's a similar situation. I mean, these are low-risk, maybe even no-risk flyers at a position where you have a definite need right now. I mean, listen, the Raptors are not going to replace Kawhi Leonard, and if people are expecting them to, at least in the short term, they're going to be disappointed. These are the guys that were out there, but as I said, and to your point, I mean, these are guys that at one point were highly touted players. Hollis Jefferson drafted a little bit lower in the first round, but a player that, I mean, he's shown flashes in the NBA probably more so than Stanley Johnson has. Both of them have a ton of defensive upside, and we've already seen that during their time in the NBA. The reason why they were out there, they were available at the cost that they were available at, is because they haven't shown the development, I think, that a lot of people had hoped and expected to see from them on the offensive side, and specifically their jump shot is a concern. And when you look at the way the Raptors team is constructed right now, minus Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, with the additions, obviously, of Hollis Jefferson and then Stanley Johnson, that's probably the biggest concern right now is spacing. How is this team going to shoot the ball? Where are their shooters? Where are the three-pointers going to come from? And I think that you figure out, you can add shooters. They've already added one with Matt Thomas. And I'm sure they're hopeful that given the age of those two players, Hollis Jefferson 24, Johnson 23, that shooting is a talent, a skill that can be taught. They did it with Pascal Siakam. They did it with OG. But I think the identity we're clearly seeing here that the Raptors are trying to build, trying to develop is a defensive identity. They're still going to be long. They're still going to be versatile. A lot of talent on the defensive end. So, yeah, I mean, it may not be pretty in the way that they go about winning games this season, but I still think, while not a championship contender anymore, this is a team that could win a lot of games in a very wide-open Eastern Conference.
So what's the plan for the rest of the day, Josh?
Just heading up for lunch now and then back to the arena. Actually, as I mentioned, an exciting game today. Raptors-Knicks, going to be good to get another look at RJ. And Masai Ujiri, who's been overseas attending to a personal matter, is expected to arrive today, and we should hear from him at halftime of the game. So we'll talk to Masai for the first time since Kawhi left, get a sense of what went down there, maybe get a little bit more of information, and of course get his vision for how this Raptors team is shaping up and what the plan is now in the post-Kawhi era.
Are you going to hit the tables at all while you're there?
Already done.
Oh, well done. I was worried because we sent Masters to Wimbledon. He's done nothing. Mark Masters has done nothing in London. So you have hit the tables at Vegas.
I was at Caesars yesterday. Things are going pretty well, although I'm sure I'll be giving some of that back tonight.
Nothing wrong with that. Josh, thanks for joining us, and look forward to hearing what Masai has to say later on today.
All right, guys. Take care.
That's Josh Lewenberg, our Raptors reporter at Summer League in Vegas.
He's already done. Could be literal and figurative. He could be done.
Could be done. Well, you know,
could be done.
You know what? If you're done in Vegas, it's good to know you're done.
You're done.
Because there's lots of people that are done that don't know they're done, and that becomes the problem. Still to come, we're going to talk to Marley Rivera, baseball reporter for ESPN. We'll talk to Billy Armstrong, assistant GM of the St. Louis Blues.
Marley Rivera might be exhausted from the home run competition last night.
I was tired
night.
Watching it. Steve Phillips will join us as well, and we're going to play over-under at 5:30 with Dave Poulin and Gord Miller. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050. On the TSN app and on TSN4. Andy Murray, Serena Williams won their mixed doubles match at Wimbledon today. And they're moving on. Andy Murray had talked about retiring at the start of the year, but now he's feeling better, might return to singles tennis. And I think that one of the fascinating things we see in sports is second acts for people that might not have been so popular early in their career. And Murray had a reputation for being a bit of a whinger. And Serena Williams has had her ups and downs as well. But now they're beloved elder statespeople.
A hot pairing.
Right. But Jaromir Jagr was like that.
Agreed.
Like, Jagr's second act, I mean, he was not a beloved teammate his first time around. He was hard on coaches. Teammates didn't like him. He ran himself out of a lot of places. Andre Agassi was not a beloved character in his early years, and he became a beloved elder statesman. It is a fascinating transition when you see it, and it's also something great to see.
Yeah, no question about it. That's an odd pairing. That's a unique pairing.
Well, he's always been a big backer.
Who approaches who on that one?
Well, I think she approaches him because he said before when someone said, you know, the greatest player of all time, he said, well, male player. Don't forget about Serena Williams. Like his mom is big on that. And he's talked a lot about, you know, making sure that female tennis players get their due. I'd bet that Serena Williams approached him and said, come on, Andy, play with me at Wimbledon. Because I think a lot of people thought it would be his last.
That's a rock star show.
Can you remember a player that you played with who kind of had a nice sort of way out of the game that might not have been so nice early on?
I have to think about that.
You had Bobby Clark, who was beloved by his teammates. He went straight to the GM's job, right? He was a player
from a trip I was on with him.
What?
Do we have time?
We have 1 minute.
I was on a sailing trip in the British Virgin Islands after my rookie year in the NHL.
Okay.
And he took us down to the end of the dock, six of us on the boat. That's it.
Okay.
And no captain or anything. We had one guy with us who knew how to sail. We did not have any clue. 50-foot boat.
Being from Timmins, yeah.
He said, hey, I just got to let you know something. I'm going to retire when we get home. I said, really? This is the start of the trip. 10 days on open water. He said, yeah, I'm going to be the vice president, general manager when we get back. I said, well, this is going to be an interesting trip.
So he went from being your roommate.
My roommate and sailing mate.
To your boss.
To my boss. In one fell swoop.
See, that was a good story. That was good. That's what we... Stick around for
There's more to the story. We need more time.
I'm sure there is. Still to come, Marley Rivera from ESPN will play over-under. We'll talk to Billy Armstrong, Steve Phillips. It's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and on TSN 4.